Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, we are back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and our website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Doug Stives is our special guest. He is the partner, the manager of the tax department at Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey, and he is the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show and is a member, a very valued member of our of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
It's good to have you back with us. And, folks, we've been talking to Doug for the last few weeks about trusts. And trusts is the subject of trusts, estate trusts, are something that is something that I am not an expert on by any stretch of the imagination, which is the reason Doug is here. Doug, take a let's. I know we've got some other trusts that we haven't talked about that we're going to get into this hour, but let's take just a couple of minutes and do a little bit of a review to talk about, number one, why anyone would want to consider a trust, and quickly some of the advantages of a trust.
Okay, I always tell people that if you have something you want to do, and if you can explain it to an attorney, who is the person you need to hire to write a trust, I don't recommend you try doing it yourself. And me and other people like me as CPAs are not permitted by law to actually write the trust document. But my point is, if you can come up with an idea, a concept, something you want to do, and it can be put down in words, it probably can be done in a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to understand that you may decide, well, here's what I want to do, and I'm going to put it in a trust. Internal Revenue Service may not see it the way you see it. I mean, for example, I've had people for years, probably one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, I want to set up an education trust, and I want to deduct the dollars that I'm putting in there, and of course you know what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. Then I want to use the proceeds of that trust to send my kids to college. Well, that's been tried thousands of times, and to the best of my knowledge, I won't say nobody's ever gotten away with it, but nobody's gotten away with it that the IRS has found out about, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what we use trusts for primarily, Jim, is in the area of estate planning. But before we go there, some people use it to protect themselves from creditors. You take assets and move them to a trust. Again, you have to be very careful what I say here, but in some cases and in some states, if you do it carefully, you can protect the assets in those trusts from creditor attacks in the case of bankruptcy.
I knew a doctor once, just specifically, that everything that was around him, he didn't own anything. It was all
right.
It was all in his trust.
Exactly. He didn't say, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, I'll just run and stick everything in a trust this week. It's a little more complicated than that. Probably the most sophisticated area, and a lot of doctors do this for obvious liability protection, Jim, is they set up an offshore trust.
Mm-hmm.
And right away some people say, oh, that sounds like something sleazy, sounds like something you see in the movies. Well, let me tell you, I've had a few clients do this, and it's not that they're hiding the income from the IRS, or for that matter, hiding the assets from the IRS in the case of state tax. But what they're doing is putting those assets out of reach from a potential lawsuit from a potential creditor.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that some people do is they just don't want people to know what they own.
Mm-hmm.
So they set up, a trust with a name that, if it was your assets, they'd call it the, I don't know, Southeast Alabama Trust or something or other, and nobody would ever know really who that is or what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, kind of a one-way street, put it in the trust, and I hate to use the word hide it, but I'll say protect it from easy identification.
Were you the one that told us a little bit about what Frank Sinatra did?
Nope, that wasn't me.
Somebody told me, or maybe on the show, about what Frank Sinatra did with his situation, I just didn't know whether you knew very much about that. That was an interesting story.
The one that I always tell is George Bush.
All right.
George Bush Sr., the former mm-hmm. president at this point, had what was known as a blind trust. And that was just simply to what we just talked about a few minutes ago, to not let people know without a little digging what he had, and also to protect it from creditors.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say a second time, you don't avoid the income tax on the income that a trust like that earns, and it does not just mysteriously disappear from your estate.
Primarily, the trusts we've been talking about have been the garden variety trust that the average American out there in Heartland America would want to be considering.
Well, the main one that I push all the time at the top of my list is the so-called credit shelter or bypass trust. These are really the first thing that we talk about when we're concerned about estate planning. And to put that in perspective is today, each American can die with $650,000 of assets. That number is being increased systematically to $1 million, but today it's $650,000. And if a joint, couple, married couple, has more than $650,000 between them, it's very important that they put this one paragraph into their respective wills. They both have to do it, which sets up what I refer to as a bypass trust, or alternatively, a credit shelter trust. And what that does is if I die today and leave $650,000 into this bypass trust and everything else to my wife, then if she dies a year from now, not only my estate can use the $650,000 exclusion, but then she can use it. Alternatively, if I leave everything to her and she dies, then only the first $650,000 that we've accumulated together is exempt from federal estate tax.
Right. And then we talked about the irrevocable life insurance trust. We talked about the generation skipping trust. And one of the things that I want to talk about today, Doug, is the charitable remainder trust, which I know is one that you prefer in a lot of cases. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Washington right now. That's with regard to the estate tax progress the treatment of estate tax that Congress has basically passed and is on the way to the president. It's already through the conferences and is on the way to the president.
For him to veto.
Yeah, but basically the idea was to basically eliminate the estate tax.
Yeah, I'll just say up front, I don't see that happening, but right. You're right. Is every time we have major tax proposals, which we're in the midst of right now, and emphasize again, nothing has passed, no change in the law. They are talking of eliminating the estate tax.
But basically, maybe what we can hope for is an increase in what you call the unified credit, right?
That'd be great.
Okay, stand by. We're going to talk about this some more. And also, charitable remainder trust when we come back after these messages. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessingame, a small business advocate. We are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessingame, the small business advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your business. Doug Stires is our special guest and our good friend, a member of our Brain Trust, our resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show. We're talking about trusts, how to get them, why they're important, how to use them, and after you've caught it, what do you do with it after you have it? Doug, we were talking about a minute just before we took the break, we were talking about what's going on in Washington right now, and it looks like the unified credit will be increased. Hopefully, that's what will, at a minimum, that's what will come out of the negotiations between the administration and the Congress. Define for our audience what the unified credit is.
Okay, everyone walks around, or at least every U.S. citizen walks around with a unified estate and gift tax credit. That's a mouthful. And that amount for almost the last 20 years was $600,000, meaning that you could, during your lifetime, give away $600,000 to any one person or any group of people, for that matter. This is in addition to the $10,000 excludable gift, so set that aside. But, you know, you could make a couple of major gifts in your lifetime and use up your so-called unified credit. Assuming most people don't do that, well, then when you die, whatever part of your credit is left, in most cases all of it, was what your estate could have as a net estate and escape federal estate tax. Let's say it was $600,000. Now, back in 1997, Congress, in their infinite wisdom, decided to increase that exemption, and they phased it in. It's being phased in up through the year 2006, started last year, 1998, and right now we're at $650,000. When the phase-out is complete, 7 years from now, it'll be $1 million per American citizen.
That's in 2006.
Yeah, now, where you're going, Jim, is what one of the bills, I forget which one, passed the House or the Senate, has in it as an acceleration of that phase in to where the the $1 million credit would come in immediately for this year. And then there's a more sweeping proposal that would just simply eliminate federal, state, and gift tax. I don't think that has a chance of passing, but I do believe, I think a middle ground, and I think a realistic solution here is that they will accelerate this phase in of the $1 million.
Right.
Typically what they'll do, Jim, is not do it immediately. They'll say, well, we'll go to 800 next year and 900 in 2001, and we'll just speed it up so it'll be phased in 2002, something like that.
Yeah. The bad news, though, is it looks like the special credit that small business owners have available to them, we were hoping that they would take some of the special requirements, some of the little quirky requirements off of that credit, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, but it looks like they may not. And that's where they allow small businesses to have a total exemption of $1.3 million, but the problem is there's so many little stipulations in there that it makes it where every small business can't take advantage of it.
Most people don't understand it in the first place, and you're right. They're trying. The first attempt was to clean it up a little bit, Jim.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of history there is when they put that thing in 1997, they fouled it up. It wasn't supposed to go to $1.3 million right away, and they never went back and fixed it. So
right.
Not admitting it, but that's what they're trying to do right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be tracking that as we move through the negotiations between the administration and the Congress. Let's move into one of what you've told me is your favorite trust of choice, and that's the Charitable Remainder Trust.
It is my favorite, Jim, because this will excite some people, I suppose. It's so unbelievable what you can do with a Charitable Remainder Trust. I sometimes have to kick myself to make sure that we're doing them right, particularly today, where the Charitable Remainder Trust it performs miracles, is where a taxpayer is sitting with highly appreciated securities, which most people out there that have securities are enjoying today. If they take those highly appreciated securities and contribute them to a charitable remainder trust, the results are, I think, really quite impressive. Now, let me just lay out the groundwork for this for a minute, Jim, is that the assumption I'm going to make, there are all sorts of ways to do charitable remainder trust, but the assumption I'm going to make is that a taxpayer or a citizen has a pot of highly appreciated stocks. The example I always use is IBM. Mm-hmm. Now, IBM came into that person's family years ago, and the basis is $6 or $7 per share, and if you were to sell it for whatever it is today, $100 and some, it'd be a massive capital gain.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem with IBM... we're going on break.
Hold that IBM thought there, okay. Doug. We're going to take a break. Folks, when we come back, we're going to get Doug to lay out how a charitable remainder trust works. It's one of his favorites.
Right.
And stand by. I know I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say about it. 888-822-8255. That's our phone number. If you have a question or a comment, stay with us, please. We are back. It's 33 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Doug Stiers is our guest and our good friend, a member of the Brain Trust, our resident CPA, and we're talking about trusts. And specifically, we're talking about charitable remainder trusts. And Doug, I know that you've got some outlines that you have developed that you use to talk to your clients, and you've been very generous and gracious enough to offer those to make those available to my audience.
Be delighted.
And so, folks, if you'd like to see the outline that Doug has put together for estate planning, and if you want to just give us an email. If you want to email me at jim@smallbusinessadvocate.com, or you can go to Doug. Either one. What's your email?
My email is D Stives. That's D S T I V E S C P A. D Stives CPA at AOL.com. Alternatively, if you want to fax me, the fax number here is 732-747-7700. And just to make sure you give me how you want me to get it back to you, mail,
yeah,
fax or email, and several pages I'll put out to you and may confuse you, but that's okay because you can call me up and we'll discuss it.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate you making that available to my audience. And folks, if you forget any of that, just go to my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, click on the email option and send me an email. Just say, I want the stuff Doug said. and be sure to give us an address or an email or a fax number to fax it back to you.
And I'll be followed promptly by a federal indictment.
Yeah. Doug, you were telling us, we were talking about charitable remainder trusts.
Right.
And you were giving us an example of a family that has some IBM stock.
Yeah, okay. And I just, before I go into this example any further, this is an example. There are several varieties of charitable remainder trust, but with the time limitations and realizing that we can only keep people interested in this for so long, I'm just going to go right to a specific example, and that is a married couple has a pot of IBM stock that they've inherited or acquired over through stock options or whatever. And let's assume that they're concerned about a couple of things. They're concerned about the capital gains they have on the IBM stock. If they were to turn around and sell it, they'd be paying capital gains tax on virtually the whole proceeds of the sale because their basis is very low. They also were concerned because IBM notoriously pays a very low dividend. The dividend on IBM right now is about 1%,
mm-hmm.
which is certainly, if you're thinking about retiring, you're not going to be able to live very well on those dividends. And the third concern that usually motivates a charitable remainder trust, Jim, is that, heck, if I die and I have $1 million or several hundred thousand dollars worth of IBM stock, the government's going to take a chunk of that. Just to reiterate, is the estate tax in this country starts at 37% over the $650,000 exclusion and runs as high as 55% under current law. So, you know, great motivation to start moving things out of someone's estate. So what we would do is take, let's say, $100,000 of IBM stock and move it into a charitable remainder trust. You need to have an attorney that's familiar with this type of stuff, draw up the trust agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, what's really kind of neat about it, is if a husband and wife do this, if I do this with my wife, we are the so-called grantors. We're the individuals putting the stock into the trust. We also can be trustees of our own trust, which means we can effectively call the shots or manage what's going to happen to that IBM once it gets within the charitable remainder trust. We also can be the income beneficiaries, and that's kind of the gimmick.
That's what makes it sweet.
Oh, yeah, because let's assume we put $100,000 worth of IBM in, and we watch the market, and we methodically sell that off over the next few months. Then what we would typically invest in, Jim, would be some income-type securities, and I'll leave to people's imaginations what that might be. I mean, even if you went into Treasury bills, you'd be paying about 6% on some long-term ones right now, Treasury notes or bonds. But hopefully you'd find some things that with some capital appreciation and with some income kind of mixed together and with some little bit of churning inside that trust, you could generate 8, 9, maybe 10% today without too much difficulty.
Now, when you said sell the stock, the IBM stock, you're talking about all this is happening within the trust.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the gimmick is, remember now, this is a charitable trust, which means it doesn't pay any income tax. So if I transfer my $100,000 worth of IBM into the charitable trust, the trust then is the owner. The trust sells the IBM and is not subject to any federal or state income tax, no capital gains tax.
Mm-hmm.
So in a simple situation, the trust sells the stock all in one shot, winds up with $100,000 worth of cash, then invests that cash in some new assets that are going to generate more income. The way we typically do our trust is we have it then pay 8% of its value to the income beneficiaries, which in this case would be my wife and I, going forward. So instead of making dividends of around $1,000 a year on my $100,000 worth of IBM, I now, at 8%, am going to have $8,000 coming in as income.
Mm-hmm.
It enhances my, in most cases, retirement income. I've also escaped the capital gains forever. And if I, at some point, die off, and my wife dies off when we're both gone, the $100,000 or whatever it maybe has grown to be escapes federal estate tax. Now, that's all well and good, but before we forget, there is a negative, because if I keep the $100,000 worth of IBM and die with it and leave it to my children, you know, they get to do what they want with that stock, and if I put it in the charity remainder trust, it's gone. It goes to the charity when I die.
You have to identify a charity at the beginning?
Well, that's an interesting question.
We're going to ask that question when we come back. Yeah, that's where the name charitable remainder trust comes from, folks. There's a charity that has to be named here somewhere. We're going to talk about that when we come back after these messages. It's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. 888-822-8255. Stay with us, please. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. I want to remind you that coming up, our next shows are going to include Beverly Williams, the president and the founder of the American Association of Home-Based Businesses, and we'll be talking about home-based business issues with Beverly, as we always do. Also after her, Anne-Marie Sabbath, who has written a new book called Business Etiquette in Europe. And we're going to be talking to her about how you should conduct yourself when you're doing business in Europe, whether it be online or face-to-face or however. Also, Sarah Calvert, our resident small business attorney, will be back with us after being off for a couple of weeks, and we're going to be talking to her some more about small business legal issues. Joan Pride with the Kiplinger Letters. Later in the week, John Fox, who is another one of our attorneys for the Small Business Advocate Show, who's going to be back with us to talk to us about what to do with the surplus, what he thinks we should do with this alleged surplus. And then after him, Ivan Meisner, the president and the founder of Business Network International, is going to be joining us to talk to us about one of his books, which he calls 7-Second Marketing. All that's coming up this week, power-packed week. I'm looking forward to it. Right now, we're talking to Doug Stowers about the charitable remainder trust. And Doug, let me, as a layperson, hearing what you're saying, and I really don't know that much about trust, not nearly as much as I should, but let me see if I can explain where we are so far in a charitable remainder trust. I've got some assets. I want to avoid income tax. I want to avoid estate tax. I contribute these. I establish a charitable remainder trust. I contribute these assets to that trust. I become the grantor and the trustee. I'm able to benefit from the income, a set amount of income that is prescribed in the trust documents. Am I right so far?
You're right on target.
But there's this one little other shoe that's got to drop on this, isn't there?
Yes.
We have to name a trust. I mean a charity. We have to name a charity.
Yeah, but it's curious how you can do that. Your trust instrument needs to say that when my wife and I are both gone, or just one individual, and that individual is dead, is that a charity gets the whatever is left in the trust at that point, whether it's stocks or cash or real estate or whatever it might be, Jim.
Yeah.
But the curious part is, under current law, you do not need to name a specific charity. You can leave it up to the trustees. Now, anybody who's still with us at this point says, well, wait a minute, the trustees are dead. Well, one of the provisions we put in our trust agreements that our lawyers do is that we set up successor trustees. In other words, if my wife and I are the original trustees, there's a provision in there that we can set up successor trustees, which typically would be our children.
And I am actually a trustee of an estate after the children.
Yeah. And so then what happens is that my children, in my example here, would then decide, if I want it to be this way, what charity eventually gets the money. I can name it a charity right up front. I can say, when I die, I want everything to go to Lehigh University. But I may want to say that, you know, I'll let my children decide, because maybe I'll be mad at Lehigh in the last couple of years I'm alive, or they decide they don't want the money to go there.
Right.
You can break it up. You can say, I want it to go to the following 8 charities, not necessarily equally.
But it has to go to an IRS-qualified charity, right?
Right.
Can't be John and Mary's grandchildren's church or whatever.
Right. And the thing that we highly recommend is that you not be real specific. If you say that, I leave it to the, you know, First Methodist Church of Red Bank, and when you die, and if my wife and I are both gone, the First Methodist Church has been out of business for 20 years, then what do you do? Then you have a serious problem.
So what do you do?
Well, you need to put a provision in there that the trustees can then decide, or if the church is no longer in business, that it go to whoever, the YMCA or the
Right.
Boy Scouts or whatever.
So the trustees, even if the original grantors name a charity, which could very well happen, after their death, the trustees can change that later?
Yes, they can. And, you know, well, if the agreement states that, you know, if the trustees have that power.
Mm-hmm.
If you, as the grantor, says it goes to the YMCA and no other organization, the YMCA is out of business when you die, then the worst case would wind up going to the state.
All right. What if, and I don't want to get too far ahead of you here, so if you need to wait on this question, to answer this question, you tell me. But what if mother and, you know, mom and pop are dead, and the children have the money, or the children are the estate, or the trustees of the estate, and they don't need the money, But as they get into their life, to the end of their life, the grandchildren maybe need the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if
what do you do about that?
If I do what we've talked about this hour, and I put $100,000 worth of my IBM stock into a Charter Remainder Trust, this is one of the negatives. Is there's nothing that anyone can do to reverse that?
It cannot be reverted back.
That's
and
right.
You pay taxes on it or anything.
That's right.
So if you bought, if Grandpa bought 1,000 shares of Microsoft stock 15 years ago,
yeah,
and now what that original $100,000 investment or whatever is now worth, $8 million,
yes,
some charity is going to get that.
Well, if you put the Microsoft into a Charter Remainder Trust, that's correct. And there have been some horrendous stories on this, say mom and pop are dead, and meanwhile they've gone through all their other funds, had a bankruptcy or had a major medical expense, whatever mm-hmm. it might have been, and their children are not doing so well. They've had some financial disasters, or they've had the business fail around them, or farm go down the drain, or whatever. And that whatever's in that Charter Remainder Trust, comes time now, okay, we're giving it to some church or some other charitable organization, and the charity says, well, we don't want the money. It doesn't make any difference. They must take it.
I'll be darned.
And, of course, to be practical there, it was the church. I would like to think that the church would maybe help the family out to the extent they could.
Yeah.
But they can't just simply support.
Well, I can't imagine a church saying we don't want it either. I don't see that happening very often.
By law, they could renounce it, I suppose. And, again, what would typically happen is it would wind up in the hands of the state of New Jersey or state of Alabama.
Well, I'll be darned. That's incredible. I have a couple more questions about the Charitable Remainder Trust. One of them, folks, I want to ask Doug, why would he recommend this? Why does he like this trust? I'm not sure I like it. Stand by. We're going to be right back. It's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Doug Stiers with Kirchen & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey, is our special guest. We are back. It's 54 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Thank you for joining us. Doug Stiers is our guest and our good friend. He is talking to us about trusts. We started out talking a few weeks ago about estate planning. We've moved into some of the different trusts that are available to you. We've talked about some of those trusts over the last few weeks, and we're sort of wrapping up our discussion on trusts by talking about the Charitable Remainder Trust, which is what we've been talking about for most of this hour. But Doug, you said this was your favorite one. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure I agree with you.
Well, just before we went on break, you talked about some of the negatives of it.
Yeah.
And let's work backwards on that, Jim, and then we'll get into the positives, so I'll be able to answer your question. Now, remember, you've taken these assets away from your family.
Mm-hmm.
If I die and leave $100,000 worth of stock, my kids will be delighted, except the problem with that is that they have to pay estate tax on that. And if I'm fortunate enough to die with several million dollars, they might have to pay as much as 55% on the value of that stock to get their hands, or before
they
get their hands.
But paying taxes, if I'm the beneficiary, mm-hmm. if I'm the heir, isn't that a high class problem for me?
Yes, but what I like to do is put you in even better shape, and that's the grantors live long enough, the Charitable Remainder Trust will put more money in the hands of the children, and here's how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to my example. I have $100,000 worth of IBM. It's paying roughly 1% or $1,000 a year in dividends. And if I convert that to Charter Remainder Trust, it's paying me 8%. That's $8,000 a year.
But now that's because we've done some other things with that money. We've sold the stock and we've created some this income in other ways.
That's right.
Right.
And so follow this through. I've now enhanced or increased my income by $7,000 a year.
Yeah.
Now, if I live for another 10 years, and I hope to live much longer than that, I've just added $70,000 to income, which I can use or I can give away or do whatever I want to do with it.
Once the original grantors are both dead,
mm-hmm.
then what happens to the trust?
Well, then what happens is the whatever's left in the trust, the principal in the trust, then must pass through to a charity.
At that point, now it cannot the heirs or the future trustees. Cannot benefit from that once the last grantor has died.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other little thing that I didn't throw at you yet, is if I do this, I put $100,000 into a Charter Remainder Trust today, I get an income tax deduction. On my 1999 1040 that I filed with my wife at the end of the year,
mm-hmm.
I get an income tax deduction, not for the full $100,000, Jim. You have to go through some numbers, and the older you are, the larger the deduction is, because you figure out what the present value of the future gift is.
Right.
Don't worry about what that means. You get a tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this, typically we like our older clients to do this. If you were 70 years old, and you did this $100,000 hypothetical future gift today, you get a deduction for about $40,000, which in the top tax bracket would save you another $15,000 of income tax right now today. Money.
This is strictly a trust that you would do for yourself, for while you are alive. This is not going to really benefit your family. This is, would this not be something that you would do in conjunction with other trusts? Would it typically be a trust that would be part of others?
Assuming you do the bypass trust or the credit shelter trust, we'd always do that first.
Mm-hmm.
But this could typically be the second thing that we talk to you about. Again, remember, these are people with highly appreciated assets.
Yeah.
Incidentally, it may not be stock, Jim. It could be land.
Could be real estate. I was thinking about that earlier. It could be real estate.
You've got a piece of property that's worth a couple of $1 million, and you say the capital gains tax is going to sink me.
Yeah.
Give it to a charity. Let a charity, you know, build a school or a church or just sell it, whatever they want to do with it.
Yep.
And have them pay you 8 or maybe 10 or 12%.
This is not the kind of thing that someone with only $100,000 would create for themselves if they have children or heirs, probably.
Yep.
Doug, thank you very much. As always, you did a great job. We'll see you next time. Doug Stiles, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour before I grow small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.